Blog Talk Radio.
To another broadcast of Masonic Home Companion. For the next 90 minutes, I'm going to be your host. And I'm looking forward to another discussion of things Masonic and relevant to not only the purpose of our great fraternity, but matters, issues, and ethics that have relevance in the greater world. We all have to admit that, you know, sometimes we raise questions along ethical lines from the things that we see going on around us. So if you can sit back in a nice, comfortable spot, put your hand around something good and warm, and let your favorite glass of Kool-Aid, we'll get into it. I thought last week, thank you, the response last week, the number of listeners is just phenomenal. And since Masonic Home Companion began, you need to know we've had, like, I think over 30,000 listeners or people tuning into this. So that's since 2010. I think speaks more to the curiosity, and hopefully that this meets a need. It is so good to have you here. This is like being able to connect with people that we couldn't all possibly cram into the room here today. So sit back, relax. Hope I'm entertaining, a little bit informative, and if there's anything that's thought provoking out there, you recognize that I do need your advice. And for those who are tuning in a few times, you know that the advice I need from you is never ending. There's such is the nature of Freemasonry. I want to share with you a little bit. We'll get into the Freemasonry through six centuries again. We're going to skim the surface of Life of Montaigne. That's the original work, the themes and issues that started this program. That's from his book, I think, the 15th century work, A Life of Montaigne in One Question and 20 Attempts. And this was, to this day, I think I've never quite seen anything like it. And it is exactly as it portrays. So, do you mind, and if you don't mind, I hope you don't, we're going to talk a little bit about a message from Lord Northampton, from the Grand Lodge of England. My good friend, brother Greg, down in Cambridge, hi Greg, sent me a copy of a magazine called Freemasonry Today. And some of you who may be connected with Freemasonry in Europe and Britain will already know this magazine. This was a compilation of the works of that magazine from 1997 to 2007, and it is quite an eye opener and amazing bit of work. So just to give you a little bit of an idea, this program today is, what are we talking about? A me generation struggle with Masonic liberties. So, you know, today, as boomers have been replaced by Gen X and, you know, all the other so-called fragments of influences, our communities continue to evolve. The promises of leaders promoting a dream have become tarnished, perhaps. Faith has been challenged by corrupt clergy, whistleblowers, and media that has moved faster than the censor's pen. we can't really keep up with it, can we? And it raises ethical questions in our mind. We're even, after this, I wrote this little preamble, the exposés by Mr. Snowden had come out and really open our eyes to a quandary. How do we handle and what do we do with whistleblowers? It's not a simple question. The alternative, though, if we do nothing about it, is that we slide into, you know, a totalitarian type of thinking. And that's something that free peoples have struggled against forever. It's part of our common struggle, and why people enjoy the liberties of living next to a major republic and the kind of socially reconnected environment here in Canada. Totalitarianism, that stops as long as we keep an eye on people in power, no matter where, in order to keep the controls authentic, because people with authority tend to become overbearing gradually and over time. So, and that's not something that's coming from my meager little mind. That's just a fact of life. Take a look around you. Apart from that, you find that people don't communicate openly and in a heartfelt way with people in authority. There's some reasons for that, of course. But having authority is a barrier. In spite of people in authority that want to protest and can call themselves the average man, only history starts to define that. So where things are moving faster. In a world that at times seems to exploit trusting souls, is there hope for one organization that claims fidelity? Yes, it has always been there in the shadows, a complete way of life, ignored by generations clamoring to just belong to an organization that might define them as something more than commonplace. Everybody likes to feel special, eh? Some would say that that organization is going through a metamorphosis. That organization is Freemasonry, and I would agree with that kind of thinking. Governments have put a price on the privacies and rights that once were so dear to people in uniform. You know, these are things that our brave men and women fought for and still do. Freedoms. Acquiescence hasn't worked, as WikiLeaks and whistleblowers worldwide have demonstrated. You know, just sort of going along and being what we are. By our nature, we're trusting. But these events let us know that trust comes at a price, as everything tends to do. No room here for histrionics or children running around the room throwing their hands in the air or rolling their eyes. This is where sober contemplation is incredibly necessary. As they say, ignorance is bliss, where wisdom, 'tis folly to be wise. Can Freemasonry turn away from the power of education? The key here is to keep the information flowing. And I say, of course, it's a bit redundant, we cannot. Join me today again as we discuss the issues and challenges we face to bring practical and theoretical education into the Masonic classroom. Architect and artificer, we do not build without ideas and craftsmen to make ideas into reality. The picture is bigger than you or me or any one Master Mason. Can the me generation learn to have confidence one to another? Those who discover the light can. Trust is bought and sold like a commodity all too often, except by a man who honors integrity, his and that of others. What else matters to a man of character? Becoming the bigger man is not for fools. It is the one wearing an apron prepared to pay the price, as he's claimed. And I put that question out to all of us. building and developing character does come at a price. Have we endorsed those values? Sometimes not. Sometimes, sadly, not. And that's not to say that that Freemasonry has become somehow less than what it was. Our understanding of it is key. And I think I want all of us to at least have a fair chance to be well informed about what it is we're talking about, to be well informed about this subject before we're asked the question. Do we comprehend it all? Do we comprehend enough to be able to comment and say whether things are in decline or not? Too often we are impressionistic. And in my impression, your impression, we know. We know about these whole processes of false memories that are going on. Well, you know, that's science that's given us that. How are people able to recall in detail entire events that never happened? Well, we can be trite and glib and say, oh, they're stupid. Well, it's not stupid. It happens. And we can't quite figure out how, other than these sort of general explanation that our brain has an ability, our mind has a capacity to fill in the blanks. Though, does that mean we're following scripts? And if we are following a script in our thinking, can that script be rewritten? Well, certainly Freemasonry is telling us that it can, and it has been rewritten if we understand and follow a particular philosophy of thinking, a way of thinking, and a form of ethical practice. Daunting, it should be. Challenging, it must be. But it's a beautiful day here on the, what are we looking at? The 223rd day of the year, this 11th of August. Perseid meteor shower is coming up in just 6 days. It will be peaking. So if you're out there after midnight, look for the little openings in the between the clouds. And there's going to be, I think, a new moon on the 12th, which will come and go fairly fast. But it will scatter, you know, diffuse the light out a little bit, make it a little harder. So you may have to sit out, you know, what's it take to adjust your eyes? 10 minutes? Till you get your night vision, I should say. And check it out. If you want something that's sort of, that is a breathtaking experience and one of those things that connects us and reminds us that we were and still in some way are all boys. If being a boy means caught up in the wonder of the world around us, then, yeah, there's times when there's things that are so wonderful that all of our shortcomings and daily challenges don't seem to be as important. It's like that moment when somebody hands you a sparkler for the very first time and you run around and you find that you have control of this thing burning that's so bright. And then it passes. But it's a wonderful experience. Now back to a little bit on Lord Northampton, if you don't mind. And he was talking about when the Freemasonry Today, the magazine, was launched. This was begun in 1997. The move in the craft towards more openness had already begun then. We have seen many changes in the past 10 years as we have adapt our organization to the needs of life in the 21st century. Much has been written about Freemasonry based on lack of knowledge and on prejudice, in and out of the organization, I would say. And to counter that, we decided to become more transparent about what we do and why we do it. Today, 10 years on, we can see the fruits of that decision and are already benefiting from the improved public perception of Freemasonry. Many influences have played their part in this. The United Grand Lodge of England has taken a more proactive stance toward Freemasonry's relationship with society as a whole. An individual lodge, at individual lodge level too, we have found the confidence to play a part in public events, with communities both lay and religious, and in opening dialogue where it has been necessary with local and national bodies of all kinds. I believe, this is Lord Northampton, that Freemasonry, the magazine, has played an important part in that process, not least in demonstrating the rich tapestry which is Freemasonry. When we consider its many facets, the tapestry becomes a fascinating mosaic in which each part works with the whole in forming a harmony of ideas, aspirations, and philosophies. We are a fraternity with a documented history of our Grand Lodge going back to 1717. Little caveat from Graham here. We'll talk about 1717 later, as we always do. But, and the three main principles on which our order is founded are, make note of this, brethren. Fraternal affection, charity, and integrity. We are a tolerant organization, accepting all men of good faith, regardless of their status, nationality, color, religion, or politics. We ensure harmony in our meetings by banning any discussion on political or religious issues. Brethren, what the Lord Northampton is saying here is that Freemasonry is bigger than us. It's bigger than us. It's bigger than our prejudices. It's bigger than our individual sense of bias. Are you up to that task? We have three main ceremonies, of which the first deals with the importance of a moral code. My goodness, if we ask ourselves, what is a moral code? You've been exposed to it. What was that? Do you ever think of it? Most often I hear the impression, and a very fundamental, superficial impression of the initiation ritual. And if that's satisfactory, if that type of work is satisfactory, the work of the apprentice is completely satisfactory only at that level, and you pass that on and say, that's perfectly fine, then we've eroded something that should never be eroded, that no one person has a right to do. The second focuses on the importance of education. Not talking to ourselves, not reading the same things we have always read, but opening our minds to new ideas, challenging ideas. That's when we become educated. That's new information. And we can become blind to it and simply say something absurd like, I'm too old, I've seen too much, I'm too tired. Where in the world does a Freemason get the right to do that? Whine and complain. Where? I don't get it. I don't think it's valid, and I don't think it's part of our order. Because the opportunity to pull new ideas together occurs differently with men of experience, and that comes with age. You see the world differently. And I don't mean somebody that comes across with unable to control their moods anymore. You know, we've seen that. Somebody that gets old and we tolerate their impoverished behavior or their emotional incontinence. We see that. So they become tolerated. They're less than useful. It's like a lodge meeting. You do not have to tolerate a lodge meeting. A lodge meeting is where we absorb, where we focus, where we're not distracted. We're there to learn. It's an atmosphere. And the third emphasizes trust and integrity. I got your back, Jack. We have charities which look after our members and their dependents. This is in England. And we support non-Masonic charities through our central charity as well as through the generosity of individual lodges. We concentrate on our central giving on the vulnerable, those with disabilities, health care, medical research, hospice, disaster relief, and religious buildings. There you have a bit of a blurb from Lord Northampton. And I thought it was particularly interesting and worth taking a minute just to explain this. Now, the editor of Freemasonry Today is somebody that may be more familiar to some of you, Michael Bajan.
Yeah, that Michael. Doesn't it all look like his earlier pictures, I must admit. Today. From the very beginning, he says, Freemasonry has concentrated on what brings men together, rather than what drives them apart. In 1723, he explains, our first printed book of constitutions expressed this ambition formally as, and this is a quote, 'tis now thought more expedient only to oblige them to that religion to which all men agree, leaving their particular opinions to themselves, whereby Masonry becomes the center of union and the means of conciliating true friendship among persons that must have remained at a perpetual distance. This was, for a time, a very radical statement. Amidst the accelerating rough and tumble of modern life, we tend to forget that human nature has not changed. The world is still at the mercy of those desperate to pursue their cravings for power, control, and status. Clearly, human nature needs tempering. While it is true that legislation can reduce the sharp edges, it cannot assure human happiness and satisfaction. These qualities, as our religions and other spiritual organizations have always known, can only come through a personal relationship with what we might term integrity. And it is the journey towards the discovery of the source of that integrity which is one of the major concerns of Freemasonry and the focus of its rituals. Michael, we knew that. Hear, hear. Within Freemasonry, we have confronted, and within this magazine that he edits, we have confronted a very common question posed both within and beyond Freemasonry. What relevance does an organization like Freemasonry, with its roots far in the past, have to the world of the 21st century? This question is answered very easily. Freemasonry states emphatically that it is founded upon three great principles. The brotherhood of all arising from a mutual respect between individuals. The need to give to those whom society has failed or who have been visited by disaster. And the pursuit of integrity, as expressed in the words of Masonic ritual, the encouragement to seek eternity in all things. Today, as in the past, Freemasons around the world hold in common the desire to become better men, better companions to their fellows, and better citizens to their society. All hold fast to the idea that a fairer and more just world is possible, but that a positive effort is needed to achieve this. We need to remember that our civilization is precious and vulnerable. The constant murderous disputes, both political and religious, with which our media confront us, show just how threatened its existence is when confronted by relentless greed, intolerance, and ignorance. In the end, Freemasonry is a civilizing tradition, one which praises the innate dignity of all human beings, and one in which all differences are seen as potential strengths, rather than sources of conflict. Despite our scientific prowess, our world continues to be rent by political and religious disputes, as if the Middle Ages were still with us. Truly, the 21st century, as never before, has a need for the harmonizing principles of Freemasonry and the quiet contribution of Freemasons as they help nurture and protect our civilization. Hear, hear, brother. Hear, hear. A positive response that comes from us. Freemasonry has Professor Brother Bajant is describing or alluding to is an opportunity to develop self-discipline. It's not reading between the lines, it's reading the line
that expresses how Freemasonry galvanizes all men. This is the essential pacifist organization. At times, we have nasty work to conduct. Our essential philosophy of harmony does confront the idea of wars and this murderous notion. But we've also found that at times that understanding is worth fighting for. That's what tears at our hearts most of all. When we step out of ourselves in that capacity, out of sheer necessity, and it takes us a long time. We're not impulsive. It takes us a long time to understand that. It's interesting today when I listen to men who, you're listening here to one of the few men I realize in the face of the earth that's never had to take up guns and go to battle. I think everybody's saying, I've lived the freedom that everybody has fought and sacrificed for. A victim of circumstance, a victim of when I was born. Yeah. And the comforts of life here, circumstance. How do you make a contribution? So each and every day, somebody like me grows up appreciating sacrifice. Not arrogance, not macho. I have very little respect for that stuff. But a deeper and more profound respect for the commitment that serious-minded soldiers have everywhere, of every land, make to fight for something that they deeply believe in. Now, my lessons have come from old soldiers. I don't know whether they have more to teach than a new soldier, but there you have it. Do you think Bajant has a point? It's hard to ignore that type of thinking. Do we have a bearing and relevance today? I think, as you and I have talked about in different times, more than perhaps ever before. I did ask you as we were reading through the comments of Lord Northampton, Brother Northampton, whether we have accepted the inferior quality work. We're trying to be kind. But here's what makes me think that's a dangerous and slippery slope when we do that. And Worshipful Brother Hammer tells us about this. The concept of the better man was a crucial component of Renaissance thought. Here I want to remind all of you and myself that Masonic Home Companion was formed on the idea that in order to move forward, we had to understand our past. It's not like, it's very droll to hear people say we've never done it before is to say I have no experience. Hear those people say that I have no experience with what you're talking about and I'm afraid. That's the way I hear it. Or I have no experience. It takes me out of my comfort zone. I'm confused. Yeah, that doesn't mean everybody is. I may have a hard time understanding how to design a piece of work to fit into the wall of the cathedral, but that doesn't mean everybody does around me. I need the talent of the artificer to put the ideas into work, don't we? We all do. And we look for the best quality work, not what we'll get by. And yeah, I guess it is that important that it's the little things that the devil's in the detail. This is a thought from the Renaissance, this idea of better men. The idea of character development was really was quite important once upon a time. Today, the idea of celebrity has replaced that, in my humble opinion. So, Freemasonry is the laboratory where this idea continues to be brought forward. Not because we can say, well, I have had entrance into the laboratory, therefore I expound on this idea. It's like, do you have an understanding of what it means? That's important. Find your understanding of the meaning. Now, you can take the understanding of other people, other scholars, absorb it as your own until you develop your own rounded out, fuller notions. However, it's important for us to have that kind of currency because it improves our sense of Masonic literacy. And if we are remain illiterate, we cannot communicate, and the ideas cannot be communicated to us in their fullness. Now, this does not mean language capability. It does not mean vocabulary. Anybody who's out there thinking that, or the meagerness of people suggesting for a moment that one form of education is superior to another, they all have relevance at different points. Experience has relevance. Does it replace study? No. Does study replace experience? No. Of course not. Don't be ridiculous with these sidebar arguments that one is better than the other. Depends on the circumstance. You're going to take, in your tackle box, you only have one lure because that's the one that worked in that nice stream 2 years ago where you caught the large bass. Right now I'm in a little stream and I'm crawling up and I'm looking for some brook trout. And I don't think that big clunky plug is going to do it. Change your tackle. Here's what the Renaissance thinker was saying. The concept of the better man was a crucial component, and the way to attain that condition was through engaging and challenging our minds, maximizing their potential, seeking a higher level of communication with and understanding of the Supreme Being. The generations that followed after this line of thought produced those men who constructed Freemasonry, as we know it, enhancing their newfound awareness by seeking to manifest it outwardly through their actions, be they individual or social. This then led to the philosophical canals which would flow into the Enlightenment. I think that's an important sequence. So if you're trying to understand, you can go backward and forward, but the beginning here seems to be the Renaissance. And then if you start to study the Renaissance, you'll find that it had roots earlier in the history. The modern and verifiable origin of Freemasonry in the 18th century stands perfectly on the cusp of these two significant ages in human development and finds like-minded men organizing themselves into lodges in order to create a rarefied space to do exactly that kind of work. To be sure, they celebrated their endeavors with hearty banquets to unwind from the rigor of their intellectual and ritual labor. But in the midst of this, they remained true to the notion that they were engaged in an exercise of personal advancement for the benefit of self and society. When one approaches the craft in this way, everything one does in a lodge, from the lights to regalia to our physical movements, becomes a pursuit of excellence, of that state of betterness that allows us to distinguish the Masonic world of the lodge from the profane world outside. Having an empirical experience of this higher, more refined state of being confirms that such a state is possible for us, outside of the lodge as well as inside. We can know that because we will have achieved it, and we then take the inner knowledge that it is possible to better ourselves into the world. This is not done as a function of Freemasonry itself in the world, as a visible social force, but as the better man in the world, improved by his Masonic education, study, and discipline. We're not well educated. We're a bit pudgy. We tire very quickly. We don't seem to have much in the way of Masonic endurance. I don't want to see that picture. No, I include myself in that. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just opening my eyes. Do the same. Oh, that's what I mean. We've seemed to have sold our capacity to look at things Masonic objectively and critically. Not with criticism, but critically. What is it we're seeing? What's wrong with this picture? Or what's lacking with this picture? Or what needs to be done with this picture to enhance it? I know there's listeners that will be shrieking right now. I can't handle any criticism because it will reflect me, that you're really talking about me being involved in this. Take a look at me. You're going to be exposed. You are anyway. Is that a little bit of a secret? I think. Does this that mean then that non-Masons in society as a whole are to be left without this knowledge unless they are somehow brought into the craft? How elitist. Not at all. The lessons found in the system of Freemasonry are not and never have been found exclusively within its doors. Hey, this guy sounds like he's a regular listener to Masonic Home Companion. My goodness. The lessons found in the system of Freemasonry are not and never have been exclusive. To the contrary, one of the most noble deeds of Freemasonry has always been to fashion itself as a repository or magnet for the world's greatest philosophical ideas. Ideas which have existed for millennia. Before universities were available to society at large, and indeed before the development of a middle class anywhere in the world, lodges sought to be universities of the common man, challenging the obscuritism of kings and clergy. I hope that sounded better than it did on this end. In the name of free thought for all, the craft, true to its name, is a method of instruction in these higher things. It is not those higher things themselves. We may be able to generate happiness, but we have to even define what that is. Is that the giggling idiocy of somebody running around, eyes glazed? Is that the mechanics of a superficial thinker? Is that it? Not according to the philosophy, the deeper philosophies of Freemasonry. I hope we don't have too many of those folks in our order. There are many roads to enlightenment. This work is concerned only with ours and how we practice it. By selectively introducing seekers of knowledge into our ranks, we do our part in those places we can to add to the ranks of thinking beings everywhere, and the attention that they will share the benefit of our teaching by way of the quality of their minds. That being said, if we fail to approach the craft in this way, we take the path of least resistance, and soon become unable to tell the difference between the lodge and any other social club in our community. Absent an interest in observance, that is, in reaching for the light through our study and actions, lodges risk ceasing to be in any way Masonic. They simply absorb whatever enjoyments and pastimes from the outside world their members enjoy, and mistakenly continue to label such superficial miscellany as Masonry. If lodge meetings and functions are no different than any other social function one would normally have in life, save the symbols and jargon, then in time brothers will have forgotten what Masonry truly is, and abandoned what makes it the treasure it has been for centuries to the best of men in all stations of life. It will become just like everything else, conforming to everything else and nothing more. The very thing that makes the craft special will have been sacrificed to what is easy and comfortable. And then the quarries become filled with idlers who want the benefits of being called craftsmen without actually doing or knowing how to do the work. Ouch. Andrew, you're getting a little close now. Be careful. My fragile ego. I'm an illiterate mason. I can't take too much of this. This dilemma is exactly what is confusing to so many men who are becoming Masons today. The entry point. People are coming in expecting the integrity of Freemasonry. And what are we getting? Something that's watered down, that's superficial, commonplace, and based on conformity. Ah. I didn't say that. Was I thinking out loud again? I apologize. How dare I? I don't think I'm the only one listening to this who has had that thought. They're coming today. They have thought something in Freemasonry that they have, for whatever reason, been led to believe holds meaning or stability or some kind of nobler order of things. This is you and I he's talking about. In some cases, they have read about it or heard things which have led them to believe that when they express an interest and submit a petition for membership, they are on the path to joining such an organization. What they find, however, in more cases than one should like to admit, is an old boys' club like any other, with nothing distinguishable about it except the fact that it has a legal claim to a name and legacy it has no intention of living up to. Ouch, ouch. We can bring these men into the craft by whatever means and at whatever pace one wishes. Oh, yeah, he's talking about the degree mills. I was shocked when I first heard that term. I was reading an article done in, I think, 1931, where the mention of degree mills and parrot masons. And I was sort of caught back. They're talking about people that were able to mouth the words without having any idea what they meant, parrots. Okay, we can bring these men into the craft by whatever means and at whatever pace we wish. We will have already lost them before they are raised because we have lost ourselves. Observing the craft, returning to the pursuit of meaning instead of mediocrity, can help all of us to avoid such an outcome. At this point, it is important to talk a bit about how one prepares to become observant. For some Masons, like listeners to this, it will come very easily. For others, it will take a good bit of hard but rewarding work. For still others, it might be a painful moment of reckoning that they ultimately decide it is not worth the choice. That is because a Mason cannot become observant on his own. He must do it within an observant lodge, where these principles are embraced and employed. Each lodge and each brother must choose his own path in this regard. The regard is observance. To begin that explanation, I want to state something very clearly that we have up to now not addressed. Observing the craft begins and ends with the symbolic lodge, craft lodge. This is because Freemasonry itself begins and ends with the symbolic lodge. Stop and think on that for a moment. We are about to untangle a large and notorious ball of Masonic yarn, and as many readers will likely begin to reject as will embrace the next few pages. Remember, he's talking to all of us, isn't he? We are about to make the distinction between the craft and its own ancillary distractions, because one of the most important elements of observance is maintaining focus on the primacy of the symbolic lodge over and above anything else that might be offered to you as Masonry. To help in that endeavor, it is necessary to clarify and define what is and what is not Freemasonry. In this case, we are not talking about the philosophical definition, but the structural one. the most useful practical definition that comes to mind is from the Articles of Union of the United Grand Lodge of England, adopted in 1813 at the union of the two then existing English Grand Lodges. This document states the following. It is declared and pronounced that pure ancient masonry consists of 3 degrees, and no more. Those of entered apprentice, the fellowcraft, and the master mason, including the supreme order of the Holy Royal Arch. You heard it here. Go and study it. It is significant to point out that under this definition, the Royal Arch was not considered to be a degree in and of itself, but the completion of the Master Mason's degree. That consideration arose out of one of the sources of the division between these two Grand Lodges and the understanding of the nuanced definition, that this nuanced definition is clear to all Royal Arch Masons. The question over the Royal Arch and its place in relation to the 3 degrees is not within the range of our concern here. Different jurisdictions have made and will make their own decisions as regards that relationship. It is more significant to point out, for the purpose of our definition, that the United Grand Lodge of England now clarifies their modern definition of Freemasonry to state that while there are now other Masonic bodies and degrees in existence, they are not basic to Freemasonry, and their ranks have no standing with the craft or Royal Arch. Nearly 120 years ago, at the apex of fraternalism in the United States, this same distinction was being made in the mammoth work, The History of the Ancient and Honorable Fraternity of Free and Accepted Masons and Concordant Orders. This 903-page volume, compiled by eminent Masonic historians Henry Leonard Stilson and William James Hunan, that's H-U-G-H-A-N, makes repeated allusions to the supremacy of the craft over all other proposed Masonic rites. In fact, no less a figure than W.J.B. MacLeod Mohr, then head of the Grand Priory of Knights Templar in Canada, states that the high degrees outside of the symbolic lodge were founded on false premises and are glaring innovations on the true meaning and object of speculative masonry. And he concluded, the greater number of these modern rites and degrees have been arranged to suit the views and preconceived ideas of clever visionary ritualists and are but the mere conceit of their concoctors, nearly equally meaningless and historically untrue. This work was written by the most prominent leaders in Freemasonry in their time, including the leaders of these very appended bodies, which the work places outside the door of Masonry itself. Why were these declarations made? Why has there been a sense throughout the history of Freemasonry that they needed to be made, and why have I taken the time to stress what are admittedly the basic functions, definitions, and boundaries of our institution? As a Mason, you have no doubt heard the instruction that there is nothing higher than the 3 degrees of the craft. This is usually communicated with a solemnity that suggests it is to be respected and observed. But then you are solicited to join a variety of organizations which you are told are Masonic, while not being a part of ancient craft masonry itself. Aside from the blatant contradiction of this proposition, which is so often poorly explained by those who make it, all of these organizations take time away from the symbolic lodge. And the effect of this distraction is magnified considerably if one has not spent very much time in the symbolic lodge. It is impossible to be properly observant of anything that you have not taken the time and effort to understand. And if you were too busy accumulating memberships and appellations in every so-called Masonic organization you can manage to find, you will not be able to devote the time and effort needed to cultivate Masonic observance within your lodge. What do I say? Can I break off here? I'll ask the listeners, can I break off here? that's a little bit of an eye-opener. So much easier if I could walk around living in a Masonic wonderland, falling down the rabbit hole with Alice. Gee, you know, you wake up, your eyes are open, and you see this is how we are functioning. This is an objective view. And as we know, looking at things objectively means there are people that will not like it. And they will, in fact, reject it, and not only it, but they'll kill the messengers. Messengers. If you believe this form of masonry, if you have a commitment to this, the notions that Andrew Hammer has put together in this book, this is one I think you should go on. This is influential. It's called Observing the Craft. If you can find it, get a copy. It's in soft cover and hard cover, and I recommend it. He's not giving a stick. What he's doing is teaching. And he brings forward ideas. And when I read through it, I thought, gee, you know, those are things that have occurred to, you know, that we are a repository of knowledge. And I began thinking that because I was hearing people talk as if, and they gave the impression that the knowledge was being generated from inside of Freemasonry. And it's not, never intended to be, never stated that way. Never. Anywhere. But then, you know, how can we address what's inspired new members and people coming to us? How can we help them to breathe life into their lungs, to fill their minds and answer some of those cravings when we've been dead to it ourselves? That doesn't mean we're fools. We're talking about distractions. But I think there's some merit in it. I do. The next question is not, oh, gee, we should have to run out and find ways of correcting. Now, we can never look at, are we really saying that we cannot look critically and objectively? We cannot look objectively at anything that goes on within the Masonic community. Is that, have we really fallen to that point? Man, if we have, and I don't want to believe that, if we have, then it explains why the foundations of Freemasonry are being rocked. Not the philosophies, but in terms of numbers. Why are we questioning repeatedly this notion of people coming and going through our order? Well, I know I've heard, and I am critical of people that want to inspire a sense of guilt, try to tell these new members that they've done something wrong, that they should be, you know, this preaching, you should be, come out here, we'll give you something to do. And it's that task, we'll get you to wash a dish or come to a banquet. And that's all that it takes. Get to know us. And that's all that it takes. Well, not exactly. That's what's called conformity. What we are desperately lacking in, if we're talking about conformity, why are we not conforming to the highest ideals of Freemasonry? Why are lodges, you'd think that we would have an environment, an atmosphere conducive to relaxing, letting the weight of the world fall off our shoulders while we're together, something that is exceptional, something that stands out, that does not reflect the common experience outside the walls of a lodge. I go to a lodge that has all of the atmosphere of a Walmart. Not the guys in it. The guys in it are tremendous. They're warm, they're giving, they're committed. They have an appetite. They're wonderful. You know, I don't think we've got it. Then the part of that atmosphere is to have learned speakers, people that are able to convey information with a degree of sensitivity to their audience, not these poncy fellows who've come up with something repetitive you know, there's some topics I just, it's not that I swoon. It's like, how many times can we beat that one to death? And it's like, it never really goes beyond, like, you know, yes, I need to know a date and when a building was built, but I also have to know why it was built and how it connects with Freemasonry and what does that, what the hell does that have to do with the point and the philosophy and the premises of Freemasonry. Now, you remember, it wasn't that long ago, a couple of weeks ago, I was, you know, startled at another startling revelation. I like to be, I like to be complacent. I like to feel that I know a lot of things, but repeatedly, I find I don't. You guys are the, you brethren, you're the experts. I live in a world of not only experts, but Masonic experts. Everybody around. That's great. I love it. I feel safer. I really don't have to think. I just have to fit in. So this whole idea of charity, what was that? Well, that worked for me. It was like give a buck to somebody that's got a handout. That's charity. Until I began to realize how the, you know, study how the word was being used in the time when it was being placed into Masonic ritual. That was a bit of an eye-opener. It has more to do with a sense of agape, this intense and all-inspiring, all-encompassing love. It still has me sitting back thinking, have what in the world? We have to admit that we could do more, and not to be glib about it, but this, the start of it happens in this instant, happens within you. When your attention is moved by things distracting, do you follow it? Do you comply? You know, we have this herding mentality. We're good little sheep at times. Or do you simply remain focused, respond to things that make sense where they fit within that framework of observant Freemasonry? The more we know about our principles, the more we can observe them, look for them today, and the more we can start to talk about them. I think this is really key to the developing the kind of atmospheres that we've wanted and that new Masons are looking for. They are able to, thank goodness, qualify. They're doing a little bit of reading, a little bit of talking. They may not have the advantage of spoken word to ear like the ancient Masons did, or for that matter, putting it out over the airwaves like we're doing right now. But they do deserve a thorough Masonic education. So wherever we see that we're being commonplace, that's where we've redefined the order. We've made it something that it was not. We. And I think generation by generation, we've probably accumulated this need to stay in the comfort zone, not to get too prickly with anybody because, you know, passions being undisciplined, people will become quite, and without having any desire to do the work, but wanting the results, layer upon layer, a lot of us are not educated enough to be able to protect a new fellow coming in with the information by giving him some of the information that he requires. We can get there though. This is how we do it. This is how Freemasonry has always done it. Dialogue, communication of larger ideas. Now, Hammer is not talking specifically about ethics, but he could. Those are the types of things that we probably should be thinking about. If we're talking about things that have to do with the development of character, we should probably be looking at what the period of Renaissance and the period of Enlightenment had in mind, probably as a starting point, and have those ideas stopped at the 17th, 18th, 19th century? Hell no. This is the 21st century. We have the advantage of the progression and evolution of those ideas. Let's not make any mistake. The amount of information flying around us is amazing. Amazing. So we can, there's no place, it makes us look like fools when we get pouty and our lip starts to quiver and we start to talk about, you know, being a man of my age, I'm not capable of anything. The hell with that. I'm not capable of new information. I'm not capable of new ideas. To hell with that. Somebody else wants to do that. They want to walk around in that weakened state of thinking. Go ahead. What has that got to do with Freemasonry? Nothing. Nothing. Pull up our socks. Do the work. Are we capable of it? Yes. Are you and I capable of better work? Yes. Have we produced our best work? Ah, that's where the mentors and the overseers have to help us with the judgments by giving us, not to slap us away unless we're really, you know, doing useless work and trying to get away with, you know, sell it by force of our personality. Here, this is the all that I'm going to put into it. Give me the reward. Ain't going to happen on my watch. Listen carefully to what we were talking about. This is a little more on the over the centuries on the order. You okay? Nod it off. Go fill your glass of Kool-Aid again. Just a little pit stop. Or you should at least have your thermos handy so you don't have to get up. You may have a warm Masonic heart. But you have worn out old knees, I'll bet, or an old injury from some foolishness. Everything about this old manuscript, what are we talking about here? We're talking about the Gothic institution, constitutions. Aha, the ancient charges, very near and dear. I love this. Everything about the old manuscript points to the conclusion that it was the work of a monk or priest not primarily interested in Freemasonry, but rather in the production of some verse on morality and etiquette. Having found one of the anterior Gothic constitutions since lost to our view and observing the moral tone of the charges and being attracted to the ancient legends, he put the contents into rhyme and added some rules of good conduct and probably the legend of the four crowned martyrs, Ars Quattro Coronati. It is not regarded as a Masonic record, but as the work of an outsider about Masons. The author may be considered the first known speculative interpreter of Freemasonry, and hence our acquaintance with speculative Masonry dates back as far as our documentary knowledge of the operative. Other old manuscripts. There are in all 99 old documents, commonly known as the Gothic Constitutions or Ancient Charges. All similar to each other in most respects to the Regius manuscript. At least 50 were written prior to 1717, and possibly many of the others whose dates are not precisely known. About 25 or 30, a few of which were printed, were made in the Grand Lodge era. The early manuscripts are handwritten, some in book form and some on parchment rolls, 5 or 6 inches wide, and occasionally as much as 7 to 9 feet in length. Many bear dates, while the ages of others must be estimated, and many are plainly copies of others. Even the oldest of them are supposed to have been taken from a single book of constitutions, possibly the original charter given in according to the legend by King Athelstan or Edwin, it wasn't Edwin his son, of Northumberland. Dr. W. Begeman, by meticulous comparison of words, phrases, and script, classified them into 4 principal families, 2 of which have several branches. Herbert Poole and Henry Warts of the Yorkshire Old Charges of Masons in 1935 have made some refinements in and around and additions to the work. Titles are likewise various, such as the Freemason's Order and Constitution, and Here Beginneth the True Order of Freemasonry, and The Discourse Have Before a Meeting of Masons. This is all written in Old English, some not familiar to my old eyes. These documents were the laws and constitutions. They did pretend to relate the beginning of Masonry, and they are supposed to have been read in the lodge at the admittance of new Masons. Gould says, place the oldest of these documents by the side of the youngest, and their common origin and purpose is plainly visible. It is assumed that the script forms of the 15th and 16th centuries were the works of priests or monks who were virtually the only scriveners of the times. The variations in the several texts undoubtedly result from differences in literary talent available, as well as the widely separated periods of their production. Originally, these constitutions were in possession of the lodges or masters and may, by custom, have been considered necessary. At any rate, they were prized either as constituting authority for holding the lodges or as adding to their dignity and esteem. The origin is ascribed to England because the earliest copies are found there and because of the legendary account of the introduction of Masonry into England and its patronage by an English king. But 8 or 10 copies were in possession of some of the old lodges in Scotland. That must have hurt them to put that in, eh? Nothing about Ireland, I notice. Poole and Wartz point out that the 90-odd manuscripts, nearly 40 were produced in the north of England, 11 in Scotland, 2 in Wales, and about 5 in the Midlands. While no more than 5 can certainly be ascribed to the south of England, including London. It is significant that you should read, if you haven't read, by the way, read the book by Rutherford called London. And you might also read one by Rutherford called Sarum. Just to give a little bit of a reference of why London is different and apart, always has been. It is significant that in the northern district lies Lancashire, where Elias Ashmole was made a Mason in 1646, and that on the border of this district in Staffordshire, where Dr. Robert Plott found Masonry so widespread in 1686. As the English lodges languished, the old manuscripts became scattered and many found their way into operative hands. Upon the formation of the Grand Lodge of England, their importance was at once recognized by Grand Master George Payne, who requested that all old documents concerning Masonry be brought to the Grand Lodge. Some were, and the constitutions of 1723 consisted of Dr. Anderson's rather extreme elaborations of the old legends and a rather faithful speculative modification or interpretation of the old charges, together with the general regulations, which were almost, if not entirely, new. Imagine that. Anderson in context. Isn't that Nick? Next time you hear him quoted as being the, you know, you'll have a bit of context. We'll get into that right now. The Atchison Haven manuscript bearing the date 1666 is engrossed in the earliest extant minute book of the Grand Lodge of Scotland, showing the same concept of its importance there. The large number now in existence, in all probability, only a part of those formerly in use, shows that they were much desired and deemed important. Some of these documents are in the British Museum and public libraries as matters of general antiquarian interest. Some are held by the Grand Lodges of England and Scotland. Some have long been in the archives of Old English and Scots lodges, and some are owned by private collectors. The situation, therefore, is not one where a modern society has sought out old forgotten relics in order to simulate greater antiquity. For these old constitutions were copied, preserved, and transmitted through Masonic hands for more than 3 centuries, and the legends and charges therein were taught and emulated through that unbroken period, merging into the speculative modification which became fundamental law and doctrine of the modern fraternity. Serious study and analysis of the Gothic constitutions was revived by Halliwell's discovery of the Masonic character of the Regius manuscript in 1839. In 1864, William J. Huguen,
H-U-G-H-A-N, there we see that again, and Dr. A.F.A. Woodford began their researches, at which time only a score of such documents were known. In 1872, Hewden published his Old Charges of the British Freemasons. I don't know if you can get that. Any of you fellows can get that, let me know. In 1872, Hewden published his Old Charges of the British Freemasons, that's what it's called, and followed it in 1895 with a second edition in which he listed 66 manuscripts and 9 printed versions. Following is virtually a complete list of all known copies of the Gothic constitutions with their dates as given in them or as estimated together with their present custody. You want to hear a bit of this? Get out your pencil. The Regius, circa 1400. That's in the British Museum. Well, if you need to know the locations, get in touch with me. The Cook manuscript, 15th century. That's the 1400s, eh? Circa 1400. So Regius could be, what, in the 1300s? 1400s? The Grand Lodge, a manuscript of 1583. The Wood of 1610, Thorpe of 1629, Sloan 1646, and Sloan, there are a number of them, 1659, Aitchison Haven 1666, that's in the Grand Lodge of Scotland, Aberdeen 1670, Henry Haid 1675, Mulrose number 2 1676, and so on. It goes through 16th century from antiquity, Beaumont, Wastel, York, Foxcroft, Buchanan, then into the 17th century further on, Buchanan, Phillips, York, Kilwinning, Lansdowne, Harleian, Grand Lodge number 2, then Dumfries, number 1, 2, and 3, also in the 17th century. That's all the 1600s. Stirling and Hope. This just goes on and on. Beswick, Royal, there's pages and pages. Boyden, Strachan, or Strand, York, Roberts, Brooks. I'm looking for the Graham. Inigo Jones, circa 1725 in Worcester. Where's the Graham manuscript? My goodness, I should know this. I don't see it. It's obviously a fraud here. Oh, Bolton, Cochrane, Cole, Langley, Dodd, that's in 1739. You can see the amount of material pouring out. A lot of this, Washington, D.C. had Boyden, circa 1700, and Drinkwater, Manchester Association, also circa 1700. Portland, Hewden, 18th century. Probity of 18th century, that's in Halifax. Dumfries, Kilwinning, that was Dumfries number 4. So it's in Kilwinning number, lodge number 53, sorry. And the last one, circa 1852. We don't know where that one's sitting. And then it goes on to others that have existed or now missing. There's a lot of stuff that's missing. Morgan's, Baker's, Dumont's, Wilson's, lots of manuscripts. So Freemasonry 1717 is a touchstone. And we should consider it as such, an important touchstone. A way, sort of a rally point, if you want. It's like the quarterback puts his hand up and we all know where we should line up. Hey, that's it. Is that to say that was the first? No, that's, I don't think anybody has thought, any thoughtful Mason would ever claim that. But we have this whole notion of modern, or maybe I would say modernized Freemasonry. And we have to be able to look at, you know, if we're going to look at this objectively and critically, can we also open up the question of what this so-called modernization has done to the order? And that's kind of an interesting notion. Are we a product of that modernization? Does this need to have a stronger central authority or a stronger central structure in order to function properly or thoroughly? I don't know these questions, the answers to any of this. But we all know that we're looking for an atmosphere of solace where we can feel safe and encouraged and challenged, where we are brought in because we have the ability
and that it's an uncommon ability. So for us to struggle to make our experience common is, it should be limited by the ineffectiveness. That doesn't matter, and it doesn't work. And the larger question, if that's your purpose, what are you doing here? Why are you part of this order? Doesn't make any sense. See, that's the kind of thinking that runs through my mind whenever I hear somebody making fun of, you know, bringing in the clumsiness of talking about goats. They bring up something that has, you know, been a bizarre, unfounded criticism of Freemasonry that happened back in the 1800s by a person that fabricated a work and declared that it was authentic. It was completely, you know, so offensive. And it included some of these notions. And to hear somebody in a lodge today making a clumsy effort at laughing is just seems to me to be continuing that mockery. And yeah, I hear it, and so do you. And for the life of me, I can't understand why would we want to mock our own organization if we have any respect for it? We can't, needs to stop. Here we go. The Grand Lodge manuscript, the invocation is typically Trinitarian Christian, which not necessarily encompassing the notions of Freemasonry. It then proceeds with the legend. The worthy craft of Masonry has begun and kept, was begun and kept by worthy kings and princes and other worshipful men, and the charges will be recited that belong to every true Mason. For it is a worthy craft and curious science, being one of the seven liberal arts, liberal sciences, which are grammar, rhetoric, dialectic, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. These are all found in geometry, which is the most worthy. And then it goes on. We'll get into this again. It gets into the antediluvian notions. We're going to talk about that the next time we get together. Antediluvian, before the legends of the floods. And I have a little bit of an explanation of what the floods and Noah's Ark and all that business is about. You might find it kind of interesting. I certainly did. Like something in the environment that helps us to understand. Now, this is an interesting time in... let me just set that aside. What are we at here? We're in the middle of August. On August 7th, I'm going to talk to you a few dates, Masonic dates, just so you have some reference points. On August 2nd, on this date in 1861, the Grand Lodge of Colorado was formed. And on August 4th, in 1753, George Washington received his Master of Masons degree in Fredericksburg Lodge in Virginia. In 1877, the Grand Lodge of New Mexico was formed on the 7th of August. Well, on the 14th of August, this is the 11th, on this date, the 14th, in 1826, William Morgan obtained a copyright for Illustrations of Masonry by one of the fraternity who has devoted 30 years to the subject. That's a hell of a title. A book that publicly exposed the secrets of Masonic ritual. Although many similar books have been published before, this caused great excitement and led to the, quote, Morgan Affair, and the anti-Masonic party of the 1820s and 1830s. You will know, we've gone over that in the past on this program, about how Freemasonry is in part responsible for the type of political structure that continues to this day in the United States. Anyway, August 16th, on this date, coming up in 1851, the Grand Lodge of Oregon was founded. And on August 21st, in 1993, the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania and thousands of Freemasons dedicated the Friend-to-Friend Masonic Monument in the cemetery in Gettysburg, commemorating acts of kindness between Freemasons who fought on opposite sides in the American Civil War. And also in August 27th, on 1920, President Warren G. Harding, he was president between 1921 and 1923, so he was just before he became president. I think he was assassinated, wasn't he? He received his third degree at Marion Lodge number 70 in Ohio. Let's see what happens on my birthday. If you don't mind, I get to scoot ahead. Nothing on that day. Oh, on the 5th, the day after, on this date in 1874, the Grand Lodge of Oklahoma Indian Territory was formed. I wonder if it still carries that appellation. So there you have a little bit of Masonic trivia. I think it's kind of cool. A quick look at Petrie Stone's review of Freemasonry. The cover page today is Masonic Curiosities, Origin of the Word Freemasons. And as usual, they just dive into it headlong. First known use of the word Freemasons in the form free space Masons occurs in the City of London letter, Book H, of 9th August 1376. So we just missed that anniversary. 1376, though the word is in fact deleted in favor of Mason. Masons and Freemasons were interchangeable during the 15th and 16th centuries, and Freemasons were generally meant to denote hewers or setters of free stone, Masons being used to embrace all stoneworkers. Ashmole, in his diary, wrote that he was made a Freemason and referred in 1686 in the Fellowship of Freemasons. James Anderson, when writing his 1723 Constitution, did not use the single word Freemasons once. Whatever the reasons, the 1723 Constitutions contain approximately 126 references to Masons, 12 to free space Masons, 10 to free and accepted Masons, 9 to free-Masons, 1 to accepted Freemasons, and none to Freemasons, no single word. And such is the tenacity of tradition that to this day, the most of the constitutions are addressed to free and accepted Masons and not to accepted Freemasons. The earliest known anti-Masonic leaflet of 1698 warns the public against, quote, those called free space Masons. Almost certainly what we now know as speculative Freemasons. So, first use of the word Freemasons in one word, as one word, 9th of August, 1376. 14th century, there we go. Okay. Take a look at that. That came from a review from Quattro Coronati Lodge number, it was an educational initiative in 2012, 13, there you go. Have fun with that. We have, just to soothe their minds a little bit, I'm sitting here with a copy of How to Live. If you can, I recommend you try and get a copy of this book. It's by a woman, an author, Sarah Bakewell, just how it sounds, and it's called How to Live, A Life of Montaigne, Montaigne, in One Question and 20 Attempts at an Answer. I recommend it very highly. We're going to get into a little bit of that before we have any much time. It was Brother John A. MacDonald that said, there must be a positive and negative in everything in the universe in order to complete a circuit or a circle, without which there would be no activity and no motion. You return and again take the proper course, guided by what? By the picture in the mind of the place you are headed for. And he also said, the intensity of your desire governs the power with which the force is directed. To enjoy enduring success, we should travel a little in advance of the world. A set, definite objective must be established if we are to accomplish anything in a big way. John, I want a proper, big, huge Grand Lodge building. I do. Sorry. What can I tell you? You know, now the words of a true gentleman. He happens to be the first president of the United States. Interesting guy. I do recommend you read a little bit of history of Brother George Washington. He's a really, really interesting man. For all that he's been aggrandized within the United States, you know, but he was truly a man that I think most of us would really enjoy knowing. And we can know him historically. He says, "It is better to offer no excuse than a bad one." There's a man of integrity. A free people ought to be armed. Be ready. Be courteous to all, he says, but intimate with few, and let those few be well tried before you give them your confidence. True friendship is a plant of slow growth and must undergo and withstand the shocks of adversity before it is entitled to appellation. You know the term. Make sure you are doing what God wants you to do, and then do it with all your strength. Interesting guy, eh? Interesting man. And it's such a true gentleman. Government is not reason. I would say governance is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and fearful master. I hope, he says, I shall possess firmness and virtue enough to maintain what I consider the most enviable of all titles, the character of an honest man. I have to read that one again. I hope I shall possess firmness and virtue enough to maintain what I consider the most enviable of all titles, the character of an honest man. Mr. Washington, would you like to sit down with me? We'll have a quiet dinner, a drink or two, and we'll talk. Human happiness and moral duty are inseparably connected. And he says, I'll leave you with this, 99% of all failures come from excuses. Come from people who make excuses. There you go. Labor to keep alive in your breast that little spark of celestial fire called conscience. There. Well, I hope I've enjoyed our time together. A little bit from questions and answers. This is a revised 2013 version. This is wonderful. And thank you to the people that put this together. You know, this was started with Most Worshipful Brother C. Edwin Drew, and then picked up by Most Worshipful Brother Donald H. Mumby. And I think today, I'm not sure if they are, how it's brought together. Of course, you know, you see these things written anonymously, and just brilliant. And I'll just pick one out. I gotta go. How much of this? I'm filtering it. I'm editing. I'm censoring. I'm sorry. There's too many things in here that I just don't want to spread out on the air. That's it. I can't do it. I can tell, brethren, but we've also invited guests into the room.
90 seconds.
So here's a little bit of something to enjoy on the way out the door. This is Tony Bennett and Aretha Franklin. I hope I get to see you all again soon.
Baby.